Atascadero, and I'll ask Mayor Pro Tem Newsom to lead us in a pledge to the flag.
Please stand for the pledge.
Thank you. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Borba?
Here.
Councilmember Darris?
Here.
I don't see Councilmember Funk. We have Mayor Pro Tem Newsom?
Here.
And Mayor Moreno?
I am here, and I see Councilmember Funk is I've been promoted to panelist. Hello, Councilmember Funk.
Thank you.
All are present. Wonderful. Well, welcome if you are listening or watching our City Council meeting tonight. We're so glad you're here. And all of you here, welcome. Glad to see you too. If you are not here live and you're not on the webinar, but would like to speak by phone, either at community forum or for public comment on any one of the items that is appearing on our agenda, the Zoom info to call in is the number 669-900-6833. Let me give that to you one more time. It's 669-900-6833. And then you will use the meeting ID, 889-2437-9018. Again, that's 889-2347-9018. If you have the agenda, it's listed on the agenda. So plenty of opportunities for you to call in. You might be watching on YouTube. So many different ways to participate. When you do call, please let us know the item that you are wishing to speak on. May I get a motion to approve the agenda?
Also move.
I'll second.
We have a motion by Councilmember Borba, a second by Mayor Pro Tem Newsom, and we will waive the reading in full of all ordinances appearing on this agenda, and the titles of the ordinances will be read aloud by the city clerk at the first reading after the motion and before the city council votes. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Borba?
Yes.
Councilmember Darris?
Yes.
Councilmember Funk?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Newsom?
Yes.
Mayor Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Motion passes.
Thank you. And I will now ask our city attorney, Mr. Brian Perrick, if he would let us know, do we have anything to report out from our closed session on May 24th?
No, there's no reportable action.
Thank you. We will move on to our consent calendar. Items on the consent calendar are typically considered routine in nature and non-controversial and can be voted in one motion unless there's a member of the public or a member of the council wishing to pull an item or comment. Our city clerk does have an announcement regarding the consent calendar.
We will be pulling item number 2, and we'll bring that back to council at a later date.
Thank you. So I will look to council. Are there any council members wishing to pull or talk about an item on? I'm seeing Councilmember Borba and Councilmember Funk. All right. So why don't we go ahead, Councilmember Borba, followed by Councilmember Funk.
Yes, I just wanted to pull item A5. It's the authorizing our annual F-14 road construction. And since my street happens to be on it, I checked. It's not a conflict of interest. I don't need to recuse, but I'm going to abstain on that particular item.
Okay. Thank you. Councilmember Funk, you are muted.
Apologies. I have a very brief question for staff on item 11.
On item 11. All right. So why don't we go ahead and let's go ahead and with your question if it's brief, and we'll vote on this after.
Sure. Question is for City Manager Rochelle Rickard, whether the increase in legal services budget is attributable to a single case or not.
Thank you, Mayor. Councilmember Funk. No, the budget adjustment for the legal is due to a number of factors, including some specialty legal services that we needed to do. That were not necessarily litigation. We did have some atypical litigation, a couple of cases, some threatened litigation, some increased municipal code enforcement. So it is due to a variety of matters and no single case or one thing that caused us to have an atypical year this year.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. I'm seeing no other council members wishing to pull an item. I will ask, are there any members of the public wishing to pull or talk on a consent calendar item? Seeing none here, and if you're in the webinar, you can raise your hand. I'm not seeing any. David, anyone on the phone? All right. With that, I will entertain a motion for the consent calendar, excluding number two.
Number five. I will move approval of the consent agenda. Oh, I move approval of consent agenda, except for items two and item five.
Well,
second.
Well, hold on a second. We actually need five approved. Maybe
no, I understand.
Not by you.
I just thought you'd have a separate motion, and I would abstain on that.
All right, let's do that. We'll do a separate motion on five then. So we've got a motion by Councilmember Borbeau, a second by Councilmember Funk, on items 1 through 11, minus two and five. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Borbeau.
Yes.
Councilmember Darris.
Yes.
Councilmember Funk.
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Newsom.
Yes.
Mayor Moreno.
Yes, ma'am.
Motion passes.
Can I get a motion on item number five?
So moved.
I'll second.
Motion by Councilmember Funk, second by Mayor Pro Tem Newsom. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Funk?
Yes.
Councilmember Borbeau?
Abstain.
Councilmember Darris?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Newsom?
Yes.
Mayor Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Motion passes.
Thank you. We will move on to updates from our city manager, Ms. Rickard.
Thank you, Mayor. Can you hear me okay? Okay. I'm going to start out City Manager's Report with one of my favorite things to do, and that's employee recognition. We give service awards at 5, 10, 15 years, and we have a number of employees tonight that have been with the city, and I'd like to invite them to come up and join me here. Justin and Andrew, Jack, Jennifer, Craig, if you guys can all come on up and stand with me, that'd be fantastic. And we will start with you, Justin, if that's okay. Come have a stand right here, if you don't mind. This is Justin Camp, and he has been with the city for 5 years. He is currently a wastewater treatment plant operator, too. He was originally hired by the city as a wastewater treatment plant operator in training in March of 2017. He was promoted to wastewater treatment plant operator 1 in September of 2018 and promoted again to his current position this March. Wastewater treatment plant operators in California are required to obtain separate certifications for both wastewater treatment and wastewater collection. And Justin currently holds a grade 2 level certificates for both of these requirements. This is not a small accomplishment. This is a lot of work, a lot of studying, a lot of classes, and he's moving through them very quickly. We're pretty darn proud of Justin. In 2019, Reader's Digest magazine ranked water and wastewater treatment operators as second in the top 10 of the most important jobs that Americans can't live without. Let me say that again. We need these guys desperately. It was number 2 out of all of the jobs that there are out there that we can't live without these guys. These professionals ensure that our water is clean, up to federal health standards, and while safely collecting and treating wastewater so it's non-toxic to our environment. Justin comes by his career choice naturally. His father worked as a treatment plant operator for over 30 years, and so we're so glad Justin's following in his footsteps. Justin is very thorough and methodical and holds himself to high standards with his work. With recent changes in the wastewater division, Justin has taken on training and mentoring new wastewater operators. He is a trusted coworker, and he has a really easygoing demeanor. So outside of work, Justin likes to ride motorcycles, advance his guitar playing skills, and spend time with his family. And we want to thank his family for sharing Justin with us. We're so glad to have you part of the Atascadero family. And congratulations on 5 years. Thank you.
Thank you.
And don't go too far because we're going to want pictures afterwards. Let's go with Andrew. Come on up. So this is Andrew Hawkins. He is with our fire department. Boy, I have these out of order here. Give me a second. He is a fire engineer, and he is also a trainer extraordinaire. I had the pleasure of taking a CPR, AED, stop the bleed training from Andrew last week, and it was a lot of fun, and he made it interesting, so that's cool. Andrew began his career in fire service back in 2004, starting on a Type 3 wildland engine in Moab, Utah. He then became a member of a hotshot crew in Vail, Oregon, and later was hired as a full-time firefighter paramedic with the Humboldt Bay Fire Department in Eureka, California. After serving 10 years with Humboldt Bay, we were able to lure Andrew here in March of 2017 to begin working for us as a firefighter paramedic. He was promoted to fire engineer paramedic in October of 2018. Andrew has had his hands on many programs within the department. He is in charge of maintaining all of the AEDs, which is automatic emergency defibrillators. By the way, there's one at the back of the council meetings if anybody ever needs one. We know where they are. We all had a little test on where the nearest AEDs are. He does that throughout the city. So all of our city facilities do have AEDs, and Andrew maintains all that. He also provides AED and other safety-related training for other city personnel. He is a trainer for Stop the Bleed program, teaches basic CPR to all employees, and is working on becoming a certified child care safety seat technician. He's been a member of the North County Technical Rescue Team for the past few years, which requires constant training on a variety of specialized rescues. Andrew has a strong commitment to not only his own family, but also to the fire family. And during his time off, Andrew loves family time, hiking, biking, camping, golfing, and snowboarding. He lives in Atascadero with his wife, Kristen, daughter, Ava, who's 9, and son, Grayson, who's age 4, and we are very lucky to have Andrew with all of his experience, and we love having him here at the city. So thank you, Andrew, for all you do. Okay, Jack, you're next. So this is Jack Light. He is also a fire engineer with the fire department. Jack started with us as a reserve back in 2009, so he's receiving his five-year award, but he's been here since 2009. We just don't count those part-time years, but we were certainly glad to have you during those part-time years for sure. He came here with a vast and varied background ranging from automotive to oncology and has even worked as a brewmaster. Jack was a reserve and a seasonal firefighter with us until 2016, when he was appointed as an interim firefighter. In February of 2017, Jack tested for and was appointed to a full-time firefighter position with the Atascadero Fire. And then he worked hard for his promotion to fire engineer. That's also a tough test, by the way. They have a whole book they got to do, testing, all sorts of things. Earlier this year, Jack also completed paramedic school, which is an even bigger accomplishment, a program that took just over a year to complete, and he is now one of our newest licensed paramedics. Thank you very much. In addition to his normal duties, Jack is also responsible for maintaining the fire department hoses, nozzles, small tools, and equipment, and he is working on getting our new auto extrication tools and ordered and placed into service. Jack has lived in Atascadero since 2007, and he and his wife, Nadine, have been married for nearly 24 years. His daughter, Cheyenne, has just completed her associate's degree in both child and adolescent development and social and behavioral sciences from Cuesta College. She's off to Cal Poly this fall to complete her education as a teacher. And we're very lucky to have Jackson, so thank you for being here. Appreciate it tremendously. Come on up, Craig. So this is Craig Martineau. He is with our police department. And I'm throwing your award on the ground there. You guys might recognize Craig because we have recognized him recently for some of the amazing things that he's done here in the department, some heroics that he's been recognized for. Craig started with the department as a police explorer while he was still in high school. Then after graduating from college at UCSB, Craig returned home to serve our community. Craig has remained committed to our explorer post as the post advisor and has had several collateral assignments. He also serves on the special enforcement team, is a defensive tactics instructor, a field training officer, and is selected to become a detective later this year. Craig is dedicated to removing DUI drivers from our streets, and he has received multiple awards from Mothers Against Drunk Driving. And the award that I was talking about last time, or the recognition, had to do with some of the life-saving measures that he took in the shooting of the deputy up in Templeton and a couple of other things. So I just want to make sure we mention that. Community service runs deep in Craig's family. His grandfather, Tom Jameson, a longtime city employee. So he retired not that long ago from the city after a long career. Tom's done a wonderful thing, and we're glad you talked Craig into coming here and doing community service. It's been amazing. We're very happy to have Craig here. So thank you, Craig, for everything.
Thank you.
And Jennifer Fanning, we can't forget Jennifer. Jennifer has been with the city for 20 years. Amazing. And we're so happy to have had her and have her for serving our community. So over 20 years, Jennifer has developed and organized the city's very popular recreational classes, camps, activities, and events. Since its opening in 2007, all of our rec programs have been run from the Colony Park Community Center with Jennifer at the helm. She organizes and manages all of the various activities, coaches, instructors, all of the kids, as well as our rec staff at the center. That's a lot. A lot of participants, a lot of kids, a lot of part-timers, a lot of moving parts, a lot of varied programs. It's amazing. Jen has done an outstanding job of implementing many new classes and activities for all age groups and skill levels. Jennifer also helps manage many of our successful annual events, such as concerts in the park, movies in the gardens, and Hot El Camino Cruise Night, including Dancing in the Streets. In addition, Jennifer is a producer and editor of the Quarterly Recreation Department magazine, into which she puts a tremendous amount of time and effort, and it really shows. It's always a beautiful product. Throughout the COVID shutdown and with our recreation activities unfortunately put on hold for quite a number of months, Jennifer stepped in at the county's public health department, assisting them at their COVID testing and vaccination sites. And in June 2021, she was able to step back into her former routine quickly and safely and reopen the Colony Park Community Center. She made a huge difference. Those vaccine sites that came up really quick, Jennifer and other of our recreation staff did an amazing job reporting up there every year, helping get them all organized, organized a lot of moving parts up there. It was out of Jen's normal wheelhouse, but she happily stepped up, and we truly appreciated her efforts. Jen has two children. Her daughter, Madison, recently graduated from with the class of 2022 from Paso Robles High School. We'll forgive the Paso Robles congratulations on the graduation. And her daughter is heading off to Boise State to pursue a degree in kinesiology. And her son, Ethan, is not that far behind. So thank you for your 20 years of outstanding service to the city and to the residents of Atascadero. And those are our employees.
Yes, thank you. And I have an employee to recognize. And if you could stay standing. Rochelle Rickard has served our community as a city manager since the summer of 2013, but she has worked at the city for a total of 25 years now. And I got to tell you, some of us have some questions about those pictures and some tutus, so we need to have some conversation at some point. Maybe in closed session, I don't know. Just kidding. Rochelle graduated with a degree in business from Cal Poly in 1987, and then she went to work for one of the Big Eight accounting firms. After she and her husband, Brett, were married, they moved to here from the Bay Area, and she started working for a larger accounting firm in Santa Maria, which specialized in audits of governmental entities and nonprofit agencies. In February of 1997, Rochelle was hired at the city as an accountant, and not long after, she was promoted to the Director of Administrative Services. During her tenure as the city's finance director, Rochelle was responsible for financial planning and reporting, accounting, accounts payable, purchasing, payroll, accounts receivable, cash management, and business licenses, as well as, I need to put some water here, risk management, litigation management, workers' compensation management, all of you are getting an idea of what Director Rangel does right now, personnel negotiations, affordable housing, grants management, FEMA administration, regulatory compliance, contract review, budgeting, and on top of that, she was the very highly effective construction project manager for our beautiful multi-million dollar City Hall rehabilitation project. The City Hall rehab project included working through the complicated FEMA administration process and securing over $16 million in grant funds from CalEMA and FEMA. Rochelle and her team were also successful in competing and obtaining $2.2 million in California Cultural and Historical Endowment funds for the City Hall project. She managed all phases of the construction, which was completed in 2013, and under her very astute leadership, it came in $10 million under budget. Yes, $10 million under budget. I continue to be very amazed by that. Well, not if you know Rochelle, it's not that amazing. In July of 2013, our council was in the position of needing to hire a new city manager. Admired and respected by staff, department heads, and council alike, Rochelle was the clear choice, and she has steadfastly continued to serve our city since then. During her tenure as city manager, she has successfully developed a road implementation program, including the passage of a 1/2 cent sales tax measure to improve neighborhood roads here in Atascadero, the initiation of a successful marketing promotions and events program that now includes a very popular events such as Tamale Festival, Dancing in the Streets, and Brew at the Zoo, a focused effort on revitalizing the downtown, including new restaurants, craft beer establishments, coffee houses, and other places to enjoy with the family and friends. A strong focus on economic development, stimulating significant investment in the community, including new hotels, an amazing co-working facility, the La Plaza Project, and many other new projects within the community. She also, of course, oversaw the implementation of the D20 sales tax measure, which included an extensive, in-depth community outreach and information sharing campaign. The passage of this measure by you, the Atascadero voters, it has helped to fund critical public safety and citywide infrastructure needs and making investments, things that have already begun to take place and be implemented throughout this budget cycle and beyond. Brett and Rochelle live here in Atascadero, and they're very proud of their two grown children, Meredith and Austin. And I believe Meredith, she just recently moved to Boston, and did she get, is there a little announcement? She got engaged, maybe?
She did get engaged, and she just did receive her PhD. So.
And she just got her PhD, so wow, a lot going on for Meredith. Very exciting. Well, thank you, Rochelle. Congratulations on 25 years of service here. We appreciate you. And on about 9 years as city manager, can we count on another 9? I can't get her on the record for that.
That's it.
But I'll ask my council members if they would like to add anything. Mayor Pro Tem Newsom, and we'll go down the line, and Councilmember Funk.
Rochelle has been an amazing person in our lives. She allows me to bring my daughter to her office that rips it apart. So, for good times, we brought her in to wish Rochelle a happy anniversary, and thanks for all that you do for us. We're very successful because of you. Thank you.
Thank you.
You know, it's really telling that when the prior city manager left, that the department heads in particular got together and wrote a letter to the city council saying Rochelle should be the next city manager. And that's, I think, says a lot, and may say it all, but she's lived up to that billing. She thinks she's respected by, you know, the management team and all of the employees, and certainly by the city council. So thanks for everything you do and how you do it, Rochelle.
Thank you.
I've had the pleasure of working with Rochelle over the past almost 12 years, I guess, through Planning Commission and now council, and nothing short of absolutely amazed with your knowledge and what you've done for the city. And we're lucky to have you. And another 9 years would be great. But anyhow, thank you for your service and for everything that you've done. Thank you.
Thank you.
Councilmember Funk.
Yes, thank you. And Rochelle, I just want to thank you for your terrific work as our city manager. Your generosity with your time. I ask lots of questions, and Rochelle is both endlessly patient and deeply informed, which helps us make good decisions as a body and certainly helps me do my work as a council member. And I also really appreciate the leadership that you provide to our city in hiring with heart to try to have a staff team that doesn't get locked into silos, but works cohesively as a whole team. And that is a spirit that we work on the council to emulate as well, working together for the benefit of the whole community. And it is noticed and appreciated in our community, and the cohesion of our workforce is a direct tribute to your leadership. And I thank you.
Thank you. And with that, I think we have pictures and pins and others, and
yes.
I will let you lead the way with this.
Okay, if we could have everybody come join up front, all of my employees that are being recognized, and we'll take some pictures. Thank you, Council, for all of the kind words, and thank you again to all of our employees who do such an amazing job serving our community day in and day out. They really are heroes. So, with that, I'm going to move on to the rest of my city manager report, if that's okay. I want to talk about several new businesses that are now open in downtown Atascadero. So we have Totem Living at 5870 Traffic Way, Atrium Mercantile at 5900 El Camino Real, FC Board Shop at 6405 El Camino Real, right next to Sylvester's Burger. So all of these are right here in the downtown. And 805 Board Shop will be moving to a new home in the Compass Building, right there next to Ancient Owl and Colony Market in Delhi. So please check out these new businesses. They're exciting. It's exciting that we have these businesses here in the downtown. And please help support them. They've invested in our community. We'd love to support them every way we can. My next item I want to talk about is the Chamber's Tuesday in the Park event. Started up again this evening and will be running all summer long. These Tuesday night in the parks are one of my favorite things about Atascadero. Spending that summer evening in at Atascadero Lake, listening to the community band. It's amazing. If you haven't been out to a Tuesday night in the park, I highly encourage you to do so. Everyone is invited to join the fun every Tuesday throughout the summer from 5 to 7 p.m. at Atascadero Lake Park. This year, there will be tasty dinners provided from local food trucks, along with a wine and beer garden. Live music by the Atascadero Community Band kicks off at 7 p.m. Be sure to bring your chair or a picnic blanket. And Tuesdays in the Park supports local nonprofit groups like the Kiwanis Club, Atascadero Memorial Foundation, the Atascadero Printery Foundation, and more. And the Tuesday night in the park will continue every Tuesday evening through August 2nd. So go on out and check it out. They're a lot of fun. We have another great event tomorrow, and I see Kevin here. So that's fantastic. And so summer is here, and the A-Town Skate Park is open. A-Town is hosting an open house tomorrow from 11 a.m. to noon to showcase their summer blowout camp and everything that the park has to offer. I am very excited to come see that. I know the council will all be there. The public is invited to that, and we'd love to see and go out and find out what they're doing. There's a lot of great stuff going on out there, and it's a great chance for Kevin to show us everything that they do out there for the community. The park will be open at noon to the public, and for those that would like to stay and enjoy skating, you'll be welcome to do that, including any council members who could give it a try. Oh, okay.
I'd rather fight a fire.
There we go. So please, that's tomorrow at the skate park. Come out and see the amazing work that's being done out there. We also have the 2022 Summer Concert Series Saturdays in the park. So we have Tuesdays in the park and Saturdays in the park. We're very pleased to kick off our 2022 Saturdays in the Park Summer Concert Series, which will again be held nearly every Saturday throughout the summer. Our first concert will be this Saturday, June 18th, at Atascadero Lake Park Bandstand, featuring a very popular local cover band, the Counterfeit Kings. And audiences are always in for a great time when the Counterfeit Kings take the stage. This evening's concert, or the evening's concert sponsor, is Quota of Atascadero. And the full schedule for this summer's concert series can be found online at visitatascadero.org or .com. I think it's .org. All concerts will be held at the Atascadero Lake Park Bandstand from 6:30 to 8:30, and they are always free to attend. Everyone is encouraged to bring a blanket or a low back chair along with the entire family to enjoy the concert. And we have to thank our very generous presenting sponsors, including Grigor and Alice Jones, Perry's Parcel and Gift, Remax Success, Waste Management, Golden One Credit Union, and Stove and Spa Center, and so many more. Without these very generous donors and sponsors, we wouldn't have the concert series. So please support them and thank them if you see them. So thank you. And Terry just texted me saying, it is .com. Visit Atascadero.com. And last but not least, I want to mention the Atascadero Lakeside Wine Festival. The 25th annual Atascadero Lakeside Wine Festival is coming soon on Saturday, June 25th from 4 to 8 p.m. And if you want to be able to attend and enjoy over 60 wineries, breweries, and cideries, plus great food, music, artwork, art demonstrations and the Charles Paddock Zoo. Admission is, and they have a lot of wineries and cideries in the zoo. It's time to get your tickets now. So for ticket information for the wine festival, again, you can always go to visitatascadero.com. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions council may have.
Thank you. Kevin will be glad to know Councilmember Borbeau leaned over and said, I could show people how not to do it. And so my comment came from the council went to the fire 100-year anniversary, and we were dressed in turnouts and, you know, helped, I use that term very loosely, and I thought that was preferable to me, say, breaking my neck trying to be on a skateboard. But looking forward to your showcasing tomorrow. Looking to my council members, any questions of city manager? Council Member Borbeau.
Actually, I just wanted to add a comment to your report, Rochelle. I noted a passing over the weekend. Actually happened in April, but I saw an obituary for Wayne Bear Hanshee. And Wayne had served on the city council in the 80s when I was briefly on the council. And he's probably better known as being one of the voices of Greyhound football on the radio for many, many years. But I'd like to make note of those who served previously on the council. So thanks.
Thank you. We'll move on to community forum. This portion of the meeting is reserved for persons who are wishing to address the council on items that are not on the agenda this evening, but over which the council has jurisdiction. Speakers are limited to 3 minutes, and we would ask that you would state your name for the record. And we will have I'm trying to look at attendees and talk to you all at the same time. Let me focus. We will have the timer on to let you know when your 3 minutes are up. And we will allow a maximum of 30 minutes for community forum. Items brought to our attention tonight won't become a subject for discussion or conversation, but we will triage things as needed. And with that, our first public comment. Welcome.
Good evening. My name is Zach Jackson. I'm president of the Atascadero Professional Firefighters Local 3600. Recently, we completed a staffing and GIS study to the International Association of Firefighters, or IAFF, located in Washington, D.C. The study compared current and historical response times using data from 2016 to 2020. It also included recommendations for staffing and GIS locations for a future fire station. The recommendations are provided using the National Fire Protection Association, or NFPA, standards. There are, however, aspects that are not included in the IAF study, including effects of staffing a battalion chief 24/7 or critical responses to the north side of town, where a third unit could have been utilized to make a difference to care for the treatment provided to our citizens. Although the study compared response times to NFPA standards, we know here in the city we have many challenges that affect those standards, including geographically and financially. Since the completion of the study, we started utilizing a placard system for our engines to improve and accurately collect data using the appropriate engine number assigned to the specific station. The Atascadero Professional Firefighters would like to thank council and the city manager for taking time out of your busy schedule to review the study. We have taken your feedback and questions regarding the data and response times to the fire chief, where he will provide statistical updates when appropriate. Chief Bryson has done a fantastic job to improve the emergency response while maintaining 3-0 staffing on an engine. Local 3600 supports the fire chief for his future plans to improve the safety of our citizens. Finally, I'd like to ask council to consider adopting one of the two recommendations from Local 3600. Number one, to adopt the IAFF study as a standards of cover. Or number two, to pursue a third party to supply a standards of cover, as the study did miss some of the aspects that we didn't capture inside of that study. The IAFF study is web-based, and it's going to be shared on our social media platforms for anyone to review. Again, thank you for your time and consideration. We will continue to educate city staff and members of the public to improve the public safety of our citizens. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker, if there's anyone here that would like to speak, go ahead and come forward. And if there's anyone on the webinar, you can raise your hand. If you're on the phone, *9. Welcome.
Thank you. Hi, my name is Audrey Taub. I live in the city of Atascadero, and I'm representing the Slow Beaver Brigade. We are an organization that's been around for 2 years, and I really just want to kind of formally introduce myself to you. We've been educating the county on the fact that we have beavers in our watersheds and that it's really a good thing. They provide flood, drought, and fire resilience. We have been supporting the research of Dr. Emily Fairfax for the past 2 years. She is an associate professor at CSU Channel Islands, and she's studying the beavers here on the Salinas in Atascadero. It's super exciting. Additionally, Governor Newsom recently proposed a beaver restoration proposal that we're super excited about, and we'd love to share our excitement with you all. We do offer walks, educational tours out to the beaver ponds in the Salinas. We'd love to invite you. We've had Charles Burbeau out, and we'd love to invite more city staff to come out and learn about what the beavers, the benefits that they can provide. I'd like to share just two of the studies that Dr. Fairfax has done. One is titled Smokey the Beaver, Beaver Dammed Riparian Corridors Stay Green During Wildfire Throughout the Western United States. And the latest study is Beaver, the North American Freshwater Climate Action Plan. I hope that's made you really curious about what they can provide us, and we'd love to share our excitement. So we have a walk coming up July 9th, and we'd be happy to schedule walks specifically for city staff. In addition, I'd just like to say we're also caretaking the river. We do monthly cleanups, and we've also identified a invasive species in 1 mile stretch that we're hoping to get removed out of the Salinas River before it spreads. It's a Phragmites species from Australia. Looks a lot like a rindo. And additionally, we've watched also, we witnessed the behavior of the beavers with the ATV usage, and we would love to be involved in some creative solution conversations around how the horseback riders, how the beavers, how the landowners can all use the river and not have detrimental impacts on each other. So just wanted to offer that. Thank you for hearing me.
Thank you. Did you have a website you might want to share with the public?
Yes, we do. It's slowbeaverbrigade.com. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Next speakers, come on up. And if you're on the webinar, go ahead and raise your hand, and we will come to you next.
Greetings. My name is Kevin Campion. I live in Atascadero, and I'm accompanied by my longtime friend, Chris Ferris, who is raised here as well. And I'm here to introduce Chris as our newest addition at A-Town Park. We're proud to have him. He grew up at A-Town Park and has gone on to compete internationally and become a celebrity pro athlete. And he brings a lot of integrity to our programs at A-Town. So we're really feeling blessed to have Chris here.
Hey, everybody. I'll keep it short and sweet. A-Town means the world to me. I want to get more involved. Kevin was such a guidance to me as a young kid, and I'm starting to see the guidance that he provides to the kids of this generation, and I want to be involved, so that's why I'm here.
Right on. And another comment, sidebar, 805 Board Shop signed a contract to take over the Compass Building at 6100 El Camino Real. We've been a couple months in the planning there, and super excited about being smack in the middle of everything that's growing and so positive in Atascadero. So that's a little gem that's hopefully going to pop up here, and we're going to really try to be a destination with a museum presence and try to bring people from all over the world downtown. So that's something that we're really amped on, and I guess I'm going to see most of you tomorrow. And if the public's watching, we're going to be hosting our local celebrity council members and city staff, as well as some other cool, notable people in the community, and kind of show you what's been going on in our community and some of the talented youth that we've been so proud to be able to bring up and watch grow as athletes and young ambassadors for Atascadero. Anyways, I love you guys. I'm really here because of COVID and not being able to see you for so long. And I received this honor recently. I was, and I don't know why or how, but I was determined to be Citizen of the Year, and I want to share it with city staff and council, because there is no way that I would be anything other than a wallflower without the support that you've all given what I'm doing at A-Town Park. It's truly a team effort. You guys are awesome, and I'm super proud to have you as friends and comrades here in what we're trying to do here locally for our constituents. Thank you very much. Sincerely.
Thank you. It certainly is a team effort, although I have a hard time believing Kevin would ever be a wallflower. All right. Anyone else wishing to speak? I am not seeing anyone. I see no hands raised. Is there anyone on the phone, David? No. All right. We will close community forum and bring it back to council. Let's see. Since we have no one else wishing to speak, a community forum does remain open to 7:06 until 7:06 p.m. At this time, we'll move on to the next item. But if there's anyone wishing to speak prior to 7:06, let us know, and we will get to you at the earliest earliest opportunity possible. All right. So now we'll move on to our first public hearing, the Apple Valley Assessment Districts, and our Administrative Services Director, who we now all know the job description of. Jerry Ringel.
Thank you very much, Mayor and Council. Just pull this up real quick. Okay. Thank you very much again. Tonight we have... Tonight we have three separate items before you, requiring three separate public hearings, and these are all on assessment districts. I'd like to very briefly go over a little common information on all of these before addressing each one separately. Council's long-standing policy is that new development should pay for itself. Part of that policy required developers to put in a mechanism to pay for items such as road maintenance and maintenance of common landscape areas. Developers had the option of either forming a homeowners association or an assessment district. The developers for Apple Valley, De Anza Estates, and Las Lomas, what used to be known as Woodridge, all decided to form assessment districts. This is not a general tax to all of the community. It is only applicable to those properties in each of these developments. The consumer price index used is the CPI for all urban consumers for the San Francisco, Oakland, and Hayward area from February to February. For the three areas we're discussing tonight, there are a total of six assessment districts. Because of the way that assessment district law works, each area generally is required to have two separate assessment districts, one for landscape and lighting, and the other for streets and storm drains. A public hearing must be held annually to adopt the levies. The general fund does contribute a small amount for some amount of the public benefit. And then I'd like to go ahead and start the public hearing for Apple Valley, if that works. Okay. Staff evaluated the short and long-term costs for both districts in Apple Valley and proposed the levy is the same as the prior year, and that's $900 per EBU or equivalent benefit unit, so equivalent to a single-family home, for the landscape and lighting district, and $550 a year for the benefit assessment district or the street and storm drain district. And that concludes my report on Apple Valley.
Thank you. I will first look to my council and ask if there is any ex parte on the Apple Valley assessment district. All right, seeing none. Any questions regarding this item, Apple Valley Assessment District? All right, seeing none, we'll go ahead and open that up to public. Any member of the public who has a question, go ahead and come to the podium. If you are in the webinar, I have to keep going back and forth because every time the screen pops up, it moves the attendees offside. All right, if you're in the webinar, raise your hand. If you're on the phone, star 9. Anyone wishing to speak on this item? I am seeing none. Will close public comment, bring it back to the council for a motion.
Okay. I'll move approval of the resolutions as indicated under staff recommendations.
I'll second.
We have a motion by Councilmember Bourbeau, a second by Mayor Pro Tem Newsom. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Bourbeau?
Yes.
Councilmember Daris?
Yes.
Councilmember Funk?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Newsom?
Yes.
Mayor Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Motion passes.
Thank you. And before we go on to De Anza Estates, I'll ask if there's any ex parte on De Anza. Nope, seeing none. Thank you.
Staff evaluated the short and long-term costs for both districts and the De Anza Estates and proposed that the levies stay as the same as the prior year. So for the landscape and lighting districts, it's $250 per year per equivalent benefit unit. And for the Section A, which is the senior housing section, for the street and storm drain district, $342.48 per year per EBU. And in the single family area, $681.50 per year per EBU. And that concludes my report.
Thank you, Director. Any council questions? Seeing none, I'll open up to public comment. Any members of the public, you can raise your hand on the phone. Seeing none, we'll go ahead and close community public comment and bring it back for a motion.
I'll move we adopt draft resolutions A, B, C, and D as indicated.
I'll second.
Motion by Councilmember Bourbeau, a second by Councilmember Funk. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Bourbeau?
Yes.
Councilmember Funk?
Yes.
Councilmember Daris?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Newsom?
Yes.
Mayor Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Motion passes.
Thank you. And on to Woodridge. I know that the entire council received a letter from one of the residents at Woodridge or the Las Lomas Assessment District that had several things to say and wasn't generally in favor of the assessment. But other than that, do we have any ex parte in addition to that email? All right. Seeing none, I will hand it over to the director.
Thank you again. The levies for both districts in Las Lomas were increased by the CPI of 5.2% when compared to the prior year. In 2017, we had a neighborhood meeting with the neighbors of this meeting or this district to discuss the issues of funding for the road maintenance. The majority of the homeowners that were in attendance in the neighborhood meeting were strongly opposed to contributing or setting aside funds for long-term road maintenance projects. The proposed street and storm drain district levy of $428 per year is sufficient only for the annual operating costs and periodic surface treatments or slurry seals of the roads. Residents were informed that in approximately 20 years, the roads will require a more in-depth road maintenance project that will require significant funding. The residents were also informed that the homeowners will be responsible for those repairs and that with the proposed levy at the $428 a year rate and annually adjusted for inflation, there will not be sufficient funding for road maintenance projects beyond fiscal year 32-33. Before fiscal year 2033-34, the district will need to come together to figure out how to fund future maintenance and periodic pavement rehabilitation that is needed to occur in 2038-39. The estimated cost for this work is just under $1 million using current dollars. A notice was recently sent to each of the property owners in the district, again sharing this information. Staff has concerns about the long-term maintenance of the streets in this district and wants to make every effort to ensure that the neighbors have all the details needed to make an informed opinion about this issue. Staff is also trying to compromise with the desires of the district to keep the near-term costs down, and thus is recommending the levy of $428 per equivalent benefit unit per year for the streets district and $304 per year per equivalent benefit unit for the landscape and lighting district. And that concludes my report.
Thank you, Director. And I know this is something we've had a conversation about over the years, and so I think the best that we can do is let the residents know, here are our concerns, here's the investment that's going to be required out there. I would like, just for public's edification, I think the landscape and lighting levy is only at about 14% of the allowable maximum, and the storm drain and streets is at 50%. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. I think sometimes the impression people have is that we're getting as much money out of people as we can. And number one, the money isn't for us. It is for the district. And secondly, as the director has stated, we are not assessing remotely the maximum that could be assessed. And that is due to the residents' desires. And we are working as best we can with those desires. So with that, I will look to council and see if there's any questions. I see none. I will open it up to public comment. Any members of the public wishing to speak on this item? I'm seeing no hands raised, no one on the phone, no one here in person. All right, we'll go ahead and close public comment, and I'll bring it back to council for a motion.
I'll move
Mayor?
Yes.
I believe we did have one member of the public that would like to speak.
I will reopen public comment.
Good evening. My name is V. Pierce, and I'm a resident of the Las Lomas community. I wasn't planning on speaking today, but I just want to give my support for the increase in the assessment this year. I am maybe one of the minorities that think that we need to invest in the future of our neighborhood and maintain its beauty and quality. And I'm willing to work with city staff to talk with my neighbors to underscore the importance of doing that in the future. We used to have meetings with staff to talk about it. I was there at the 2017 meeting where we had a surplus of funds in the account, and so at that point I wasn't opposed to decreasing the assessments in order to make it, you know, a little bit look a little better for our community. Mm-hmm. Plus, we were in a recession at that time, so a lot of our folks were hurting. But I didn't realize we were going to continue underfunding our district, our assessment district. So I just want to offer my support for what's proposed tonight and my support for the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Pierce. Anyone else in the public wishing to speak on this item? Seeing that, I'll go ahead and reclose public forum and or public comment and bring that back to council for a motion. I think Councilmember Morbeau, ready.
I'll move approval of resolutions A, B, C, and D as recommended.
I'll second.
Motion by Councilmember Morbeau, a second by Councilmember Funk. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Morbeau?
Yes.
Councilmember Funk?
Yes.
Councilmember Darris?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Newsom?
Yes.
Mayor Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Motion passes.
Thank you. We are moving on to the Atascadero Tourism Business Improvement District confirmation annual assessment. I will ask my colleagues, anybody with ex parte? I already skipped to number 5. We are on the, thank you. That's why I need a mayor pro tem here. Downtown Parking and Business Improvement Area confirmation of the annual assessment. Do we have any ex parte? Seeing none. All right. We will hand that over to... I have Ms. Banish doing that. Is Terry popping on?
Yes.
There she is.
Can you hear me?
All right. We got you. Yes.
Very good. Good evening, Council. Thank you for having me. So we have the City of Atascadero Downtown Parking and Business Improvement Area District to look at for the confirmation of the annual assessment. Oops, excuse me. It went to a slide that I didn't want it to go to. Hang on one second. Oh. Never mind.
We're ready for questions. You're quick. I like it.
All right. No problem. So I'm just going to go ahead. So the map of the BIA area hasn't changed at all. It's still the same boundaries as it always has been. The City of Atascadero established a downtown parking and business improvement area in 1986, Chapter 11 of the Atascadero Municipal Code, for the purpose of acquisition, construction, or maintenance of parking facilities, decoration of public places, promotion of public events, and general promotion of business activities in the downtown area. The code requires the city to levy and collect the assessments, the city council to adopt an annual resolution of intention declaring the city's intent to levy an annual downtown parking and business improvement area assessment, and hold a public hearing confirming the assessment. The City Council adopted a draft resolution of intention on May 24th, and here we are tonight for a public comment. This all requires submission of an annual report by the advisory body, being the Chamber of Commerce. Here they had submitted their report on the Business Improvement District. In 2019, the city entered into an agreement with the Chamber of Commerce on expenditure of BIA funds. The Chamber serves as the advisory body and the subcontractor to the city regarding the DPBIA. The Informal Committee of Downtown Business Owners advises the Chamber of Commerce on expenditures and assists in the creation of the annual budget. As part of the contract, the Chamber provides an annual accounting of expenditures for the BIA funds. Here's the proposed expenditures that are provided, and the Chamber has submitted the report. The assessments collected by the city are estimated at approximately $12,820 annually. The recommended action would confirm the assessment and collection of these funds for downtown revitalization activities for 2022-2023. And again, the report does not propose any changes to the boundaries of the DPBIA or of the assessment. The recommendation is to adopt the draft resolution confirming the annual assessment for the DPBIA for fiscal year 2022 and 2023. Are there any questions?
Thank you, Ms. Banish. And just to let the public know really what this is, it is the downtown businesses, and there's a certain boundary line, but they have all decided to assess themselves, essentially double their business tax, assess themselves to pull together some funds in order to promote the downtown. So through events and beautification, their goal is to make downtown an even better place to be. And part of the excitement and energy that we see down there, they play a big role in that. So it's fun to see them doing these things, and we're grateful that they are, because they've really been doing a great job with little events, and like the Taco Day on Traffic Way, that's been a big hit for many years now, and I believe that's coming back. And so we really thank them for what they're doing. But just in case you and the public were wondering what that is what it's all about. With that, I'll see if there's any questions of council. By council. No? Seeing none, I will go ahead and open it up to public comment. If there's anyone in the webinar that wishes to speak, go ahead and raise your hand. Anyone on the phone, David? Anyone in here in person? No, no one wishing to speak. All right, we'll go ahead and close public comment and bring it back to council for a motion.
I'll move we adopt staff's recommendation to adopt the draft resolution.
I'll second.
Motion by Councilmember Borbeau, a second by Councilmember Darris. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Borbeau?
Yes.
Councilmember Darris?
Yes.
Councilmember Funk?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Newsom?
Yes.
Mayor Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Motion passes.
Thank you. Now we are on to the Atascadero Tourism Business Improvement District. Any ex parte? Seeing none. All right. Terry, take it away.
All righty. Very good. Thank you. So this is the Atascadero Business Improvement District that was established in 2013 to levy an annual assessment under the Parking and Business Improvement Area Law of 1989 by adopting Title III, Chapter 16 of the Atascadero Municipal Code in April 2013. The activities that are funded by the assessments on lodging businesses with the app bid are tourism promotions and marketing programs to promote the city as a tourism destination here for Atascadero and in the county. The City Council appointed at-bid advisory board members to serve at the pleasure of council. The advisory board is made up of lodging business owners or employees or other representatives holding written consent of a lodging business owner within the at-bid area. Lodging owners are assessed 2% of the rent charged by the business per occupied room, basically on their guests or space per night for transient occupancies. The annual report was presented to council at the May 24th meeting, and in summary, that current budget projects that assessment revenue for fiscal year 22-23 will be $298,170. However, with recent upward revenue trends, there's a good possibility that revenues will exceed that projection. Expenditures for fiscal year 2021-22 are expected to come in under budget by about $18,540, or about 6%. And the at-bid fund balance is now projected to be $473,720 at June 30th, 2022, and $464,910 at June 30th, 2023. The levies must be adopted annually, and our recommendation for council tonight is to adopt the draft resolution confirming the annual assessment for the Atascadero Tourism Business Improvement District for the fiscal year 2022-2023.
Thank you. Another assessment district that has really been a great addition to the city, I think I want to say it was 2013 when the council voted to form an ATBIT at the recommendation and request of several hoteliers, and it's been very successful, and we've seen them work very well with you, Terry, with businesses bringing other events here, and so it's really been nice, and we thank you for your work with them. Because I think it's been a real benefit to our city, both residents. I think residents is the side benefit. Their job is heads in beds because they're hoteliers, but I think residents get that side benefit of some events and things like that that we might not normally have. So we thank them for what they're doing. With that, I'll ask if we've got any questions of staff. Seeing none, I'll go ahead and open that up to the public. If there's any public comment on this item. I am seeing none. Anyone on the phone, David? No. All right. We'll go ahead and close public comment and bring that back to council for a motion.
I'll move we adopt the draft resolution as recommended.
I'll second.
A motion by Councilmember Bourbeau, a second by Councilmember Funk. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Bourbeau?
Yes.
Councilmember Funk?
Yes.
Councilmember Darris?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Newsom?
Yes.
Mayor Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Motion passes.
Thank you. Well, we have one item left, and normally I would just continue on. It might be a little bit of a bigger item. I didn't know if we wanted to take a quick break. I'll just kind of look to my colleagues. How are we doing? All right. I think we're looking good, everybody. All right. Here we go. So on to number six of our public hearings, amendments and additions to the fee schedule, and that will be Director Jerry Rangel.
Thank you again, and good evening again. Tonight, I am very pleased to bring you the update to the fee schedule. We've been working long and hard on this, and we're excited to bring it to you this evening. City government is really here to serve the needs of the people and be good stewards of the public's funds. City services that provide general community benefit, like police patrols, fire suppression, park maintenance, these are all paid for using tax revenues. Other city services provide benefits to an individual person, organization, or company and can be funded using service fee revenues. That is, charging the individual for the specific service they receive. Individual benefit services can include items like development services, park and recreational services, rental of city facilities, or others. To the extent that these individual services are not funded with service fee revenues, general tax dollars are needed to subsidize them. Why is this? Well, real costs are incurred each time a service is provided to the community. Full cost recovery helps to stretch our limited resources by using service fee revenue to pay for the costs of services versus using tax dollars. When service fees are subsidized, we are prioritizing service fees for individuals over other services that will benefit the entire community. As we all know, there are limited revenues and many potential ways to spend those, and we have to make sure that we continue to prioritize those dollars in ways to help us reach our goals. The key discussion tonight is finding the right balance between full cost recovery for services and general government subsidies. As good stewards of the public's funds, it's important to determine and review the cost to perform the service and amounts charged for these services and determine if the revenues appropriately reflect the city's priorities. So how do we go about this? We had to determine first what the real costs are to provide the services. Staff put a lot of time and effort into defining each fee, determining how much time was spent on each, and how best to refine or restructure the fees so they best reflect the needs of the community. Mr. Eric Johnson with Revenue Cost Specialists, or RCS, then took that data and performed a very detailed analysis necessary to determine the cost to perform each service. Mr. Johnson will go into more detail about that shortly and talk about the process. California Government Code allows cities to charge fees to consumers of these services up to the cost of providing the services. In other words, council can authorize staff to charge fees for city services as long as the fees do not exceed costs reasonably borne to provide those services. And that's just what RCS did with the report. From there, the draft fee schedule was developed with a limited number of subsidies recommended. Some fees in the report indicate they are new. These generally fall into one of three categories: fees that have been more refined and restructured in some cases, and as a result, have either been broken out into separate line items or reallocated to or from other fees. In some cases, there's no good comparison from the current fee schedule to the new fee schedule in the draft because the process and structure of how things are done has changed since the last cost study was completed in 2014. We're not really comparing apples to apples in those cases. The second category are fees that have been added because of changing legislation, services that weren't previously required but now are. And the third category is fees that have been added because the way we do business has changed or new options are available. The report estimates $969,000 in additional revenue with the adoption of the draft fees. And while I certainly appreciate Mr. Johnson's optimism on that number, I'm not quite ready to recommend building this into our budget. The revenue estimate is for new revenue over our current fees that are based on the last cost study from 2014. Because of the timing of that study, some of the staff members were not yet hired, and therefore their costs could not be included into that fee calculation. Staffing has changed so much in the last 8 years, and now the costs of new staff members can be included in the fee calculations, leading to what is included as new revenue, but is really just more complete cost recovery. The methodology to determine the cost to provide services uses averages and assumes ideal circumstances in every case. Costs are more often higher to perform those services than we actually collect with a fee. The calculation of the new revenue assumes average number of each of these services taking place each year. This will vary from year to year, of course. And new fees have also been added during the study to reflect new services. To give you an idea of how these new fees might impact that estimated revenue number, here are some examples. Fee 22-055, Public Improvement Plan Check, is estimated to add an additional $85,000 a year in recovery costs that reflect the costs of all staff involved in the service. Fee 22-091A and C are for hotel assisted living apartment inspections as a result of relatively new regulations that now require these types of occupancy to hire the fire department to perform inspections. Fee 22-127, credit card processing, allows for the recovery of costs related to the option for people to use their credit card as a convenient form of payment of city fees. Some services that are considered individual benefit also have indirect benefits to the community. Take youth sports, for example. This fee has been consistently subsidized over the years. Subsidizing the costs of something like youth basketball helps keep the costs reasonable for the average family. That, in turn, helps also keep the youth busy and out of trouble, and indirectly reduces crime and provides a better community as a whole. Subsidies are recommended for the categories of recreation, leisure, and culture. Additionally, partial subsidies are recommended for those items that encourage economic development, encourage compliance, ease the burden of filing appeals, and/or encourage volunteerism in the community. All of these reasons are intended to provide broad community benefit and enhance the community as a whole. judicious use of subsidies is recommended to avoid dilution of the city's ability to effectively provide priority services to the community. And I will now turn the report over to Mr. Johnson with RCS, and he can go over some of the details of the report.
Great. Thank you, Jerry. Good evening, Mayor, members of the City Council. I am Eric Johnson from Revenue and Cost Specialist, and just wanted to give a quick overview of the process and how we got to the results you see in the report. Because, of course, our goal is to identify what are the costs of providing the services. And so we need to start with what services are being provided, what changes have happened since 2014. So we sit down with the departments at the very start of this process and go through the list, identify what has changed, what do we want to break out, what are you no longer providing, what are we now providing differently than we did before. And then we go through the process of multiple meetings of identifying who's spending time on that, how much time is being spent on that, how many of these are you doing? Does that add up? Do the hours add up? Are we allocating hours that don't exist or vice versa? And are we allocating too little hours when we're looking at total position time? And so that process was multiple meetings over many months of fine-tuning that data and getting to the point where we were all comfortable that this reflects where the city's at today. Once we establish that service time, we need to identify what the costs are. So for every position in the city, we developed a fully allocated hourly rate. So this includes salaries, this includes benefits, general operating expenses within each department, but also overheads. And there's city overheads. We did a detailed cost allocation plan where we fairly allocated out the city administrative costs, so city council, city manager, finance, fleet maintenance, facility maintenance, HR, all those things, those functions that employees need to be able to do their job. We allocated departmental overhead and in some cases division overhead so that we in essence had a full business hourly rate for every position in the city. We then matched that up with that time detail so now we knew what each service cost. We then went back to the departments, we reviewed that data again, we looked at the current fee information, we compared that to the cost, and in most cases we recommended a fee in this report to recover 100% of those costs. As Jerry mentioned, there's some other adjustments that staff has made on some services, but we're saying this is the full cost and this is a fee structure that we feel will recover those costs should the council decide to approve those fees. So at the end of the day, our job is to identify the cost, develop recommendations to recover those costs. It's now up to the council to decide who's going to pay for those services, what is important enough to subsidize, and what should be borne by the party receiving the benefit of the service. And that concludes my presentation.
Well, thank you, Mr. Johnson, and thank you, Director Rangel. Usually we do a budget, you know, every 2 years, and it's a really big undertaking by our administrative services department and a lot of the staff throughout the city. And normally they get a year off, and this would be that year off. But on the year off, they had to go through this fee study, which, again, was a lot of work for administrative services and a lot of the other departments. So thank you to one and all who put such an effort into this. I think what I'm hearing you say, Director, is that there was a time when we didn't have certain employees in place. I mean, back in that day, we were still kind of recovering from the recession and our, you know, the challenges that we had with, you know, bringing on employees. And so even if we were needing to provide a service and, you know, maybe contract out for it or do something, we weren't actually able to recoup the cost of what it was actually costing us at the time. So that $85,000 number you showed, that's something that in essence the city has been subsidizing, or all of us have been subsidizing the past 8 years.
That is correct.
Okay. And then I just wanted to clarify too, when you said new regulations, those were state regulations, not city regulations.
Correct.
Correct. Correct. Thank you for that clarification. All right. With that, let's go ahead and I'll look to my council members to see who has any questions. Council Member Borbo.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I have several questions, actually. And your comments, Mayor, may have alluded to perhaps an answer. I'm concerned in looking at the fee schedule at some of the substantial changes on some fees. So I'm looking at like a number 2 and number 4 and in 16A and 16B, where the change is very substantial. In some case, almost a doubling. And what I'm wondering is that because of a substantial change in the way we provide that particular service, or a substantial change, perhaps, as the mayor noted, you know, a state regulation that requires us to do it differently or to do it more thoroughly or do it in a more time-intensive manner. Because I'm concerned about, like, a minor conditional use permit going up from 1264 to 2795, more than doubling. And then there are a few that went down, not by 50%, not cut in half, but went down, a fairly significant amount. So I'm concerned about what would cause these rather drastic changes. And these are primarily in the community service or community development arena regarding, you know, planning and building activities. And I don't know if Phil is on the line. Perhaps that might be in his department. But Jerry, or if you or the RCS representative could answer that.
Certainly. So we could probably tag team this one. So certainly across the fee schedule, there are a lot of different things, and we can look at these particular ones. Senior Planner Gleason is on the line, I think, as well, to answer some questions. But in some cases, these were really refined and reallocated. A lot of these things that you come in for community development, you don't just end up with one permit. You're having, you're doing this thing over here and this thing over here, and so there's time spent. Maybe we spent this hour working on, you know, a staff report for over here, so that hour maybe is better allocated in this fee than this fee, but normally those are paired together. So some of the instances is that, some of it is the staff time, some of it's just restructuring, refining these. Senior Planner Gleason can probably maybe address these particular ones since she's more familiar with them.
Sure, yeah. I mean, I know there were concerns sort of with a minor conditional use permit review. So we now have, a DRC process where we sort of write a large staff report, just as large as we do for Planning Commission. We have a public hearing so that, you know, takes some additional time to accommodate. We have noticing for all of those projects as well. I think you kind of mentioned number 16A, which is our negative declaration. So we have a couple processes tied to the neg dec fee. One of those is our precise plan. So those are single family houses that would trigger environmental review because they're on excessive slopes. So if we look at our precise plan fee, I believe that we kept that one a little bit lower because those tend to be template documents and they tend to have very similar mitigation measures as we move forward. So this negative declaration fee really would be applied to the larger scale projects, larger development projects that require use permits, larger subdivision maps and things of that nature. So they are larger projects. The state has also added some additional review requirements. I think there's three more sections in CEQA since our last fee update that need to be analyzed and required, and there's some additional posting requirements through the state for CEQA documents that come on board, I think, in 2020.
Yeah. Would that apply as well as like 16B and 16C, where we're going from having no fee to, in 16B, if it's a class 32, I don't know what that is, over $1,000, and for the mitigated neg dec addendum, $2,625. You know, we're going from nothing to a very substantial fee. Is that for some of the same reasons, or why would that be?
Sure. So we currently don't have a fee for a Class 32 exemption. It was added to CEQA for infill development projects, but it is, you know, a 5 to 10 page analysis document where we have to look at traffic. We have to analyze sort of traffic impacts, and it's sort of a much larger thing than just sort of a one-page exemption that gets filed with the state. So we've been either, you know, doing these at no cost, or we've been adding the neg dec fee, which is probably a little bit too high for some of these projects. And so we've kind of decided to break them out like a lot of jurisdictions are doing, so that we can kind of refine those fees and make sure we're only charging for the time that we're spending.
Okay. And I think you mentioned the DRC or Design Review Committee process as being part of the cost on one of them. But that's not, I just want to make sure that's not occurring. That we're not, are we requiring more projects to go to the DRC and then therefore incurring a fee that we didn't previously require, or because we didn't previously require them to go to the DRC? Or can you clarify that for me?
Sure. I don't think it's more projects going to DRC. I'm not sure where DRC was formed in relation to our last fee schedule. I think there might have been some sort of subsidy level with DRC, but I think that Eric in this fee study has included all of that staff time in writing the staff report and going to hearing that's associated with our DRC. So our code is currently set up for all multifamily and larger commercial projects to go to DRC, and we do see quite a few of those types of projects.
Okay, thank you. I'm just concerned about the, you know, so these fees can add up to be quite a substantial imposition on a project, so I'm always concerned about making sure we're as clean
and lean as possible. I did also want to add, and Eric can maybe confirm that we're kind of not doing separate mailing fees anymore. The mailing and noticing fees are kind of built into the projects. You know, because that took time to sort of figure out how many parcels we were addressing. And since we have to notice every project, they're kind of built in. So some of the fee increases, of course, not all of it, has to do with how we've restructured in that way.
Thank you. And speaking of those notification requirements, I noticed that on some of the sign permit fees, there's some of the costs attributed to noticing. We do noticing of the neighbors when somebody's going to put in a sign.
They're not all signs, but if it requires an administrative use permit, that's a public hearing, so we're required to notice those at the standard 300 feet.
Okay.
And those would be asking for sign exceptions or something outside of the standard municipal code requirements.
Got it. And then on fees 28 and 29, which is appeal to the Planning Commission or appeal to City Council, those fees are going up rather substantially. Almost double in the case of an appeal to the Planning Commission. Those fees would be charged to, let's say, an applicant who had been denied, but they also would be charged to, let's say, neighbors who might object to a project approval. They're not charged, as we know, if a council member appeals, files the appeal. Is there a particular reason you can think of that that went up so much, or is just the analysis of how much time is spent actually processing one of those appeals?
Sure. So I believe most of those cost increases were just due to the amount of staff time it takes for staff reports and hearings and presentation.
Okay.
And also keeping it at the 70% cost recovery, which was the council policy from before.
Okay. Right. Thank you. Because I'm just concerned, you know, that when we talk about public appeal, there's a little bit of a public participation angle there. And so a little concerned about that one. And then, let's see, a question maybe for city manager. The fees regarding the use of City Hall, I think when those were established, there was some concern that they might be so high they would discourage the use of City Hall for events. Do we have any track record on how much the City Hall is being rented out for these type of events?
We have not had a ton of private events here at City Hall. Obviously, we do allow the use of City Hall, particularly during the daytime hours, for a lot of nonprofits and special things. But renting it out for weddings, I think we've only had a handful of rentals of this space.
Okay. And then the last items, 131 and 131A, which are the very last ones. One is, you know, giving you Director of Administrative Services ability to waive certain fees that were incurred due to staff error. Well, it's like I would certainly hope so that we would waive any fees that were charged in error. But the last one is waiver of nominal amounts under $10 that are due to the city to reduce the administrative cost burden. And when I read that, having been a former finance director, and I know how much work it can be for you to process a $10, a $12 check, let's say, I'm wondering why that figure isn't higher in order to make your job easier and more time, you know, respect your time a little more. Because, I mean, if you take somebody pays a $12 fee, writes a check to the police department or something, and they've got to handle it and get it to you, and you've got to handle it and everything, unless it's, you know, done a lot where there's a high volume, shouldn't we grant you more authority in that regard? Like at least $20, $25, let's say.
We kind of took a look at this, and we kind of determined that 10 seemed to be appropriate for what we were seeing coming through. So that's kind of why we put the $10 in there. It just seemed appropriate given our kind of track record on what we've seen.
Okay, if you think it's appropriate. And in general, we're adopting this if a year from now, 2 years from now, experience tells us something different, or it's causing a concern in terms of discouraging activity we want to see or whatever, we can readdress this fee schedule annually, right?
Yes, our current understanding is that council would like us to come back annually with CPI increases, so at that time we can look at this particular item and report to you if we find that isn't, $10 isn't enough.
Okay, but I mean in general across the board on these fees, we can address this annually.
Correct.
Got it. Okay, thank you. That's my questions, Mayor. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Darris.
Thank you. Just I just have one follow-up question on what Charles was touching on the minor conditional use permit. You know, a significant increase, actually more than doubled. I noticed a lot of the fees are based, you know, on a percentage or the size of the project or whatever it might be. And I've seen a lot of conditional use permit reports. Not all are created equal. Some being, at least from my perception, easier than others, and maybe I've never put one together. So as far as, is there another way to generate or to calculate the fee based on just a flat rate? I'm not sure why this is a flat rate versus based on the project. Unless there's, a problem, maybe there's history that just indicates that it works out because it's a minor use permit.
I'm sorry, could you tell me what number you're...
Well, specifically, this one is number 2. So it jumped from 1264 to almost 2800.
So I think a lot of time spent on those applications are sort of staff reports and hearings, and I know there can be some variety in staff reports. It's really hard unless we were to switch over to like a fully hourly type rate fee. There are some, you know, minor use permits where maybe somebody's moving into an existing building, but they have a lot of noise associated with them, or, you know, a lot of studies or traffic analysis that needs to be done. And then there could be a really large building that has some great landscaping, and it's in the right area and it's not that big of a deal. So it's really hard to base those kind of fees on size because projects can vary so much based on what they're asking for. But a majority of that fee is sort of staff report preparation and those things that just sort of need to be done along the way for any size project.
Okay. That's it. Thank you.
If I could add on to that, when we are going through the process, there are some fees in here that are time and materials deposit because the range of possible projects is very large. It's a very wide range. And so that makes more sense as a time and materials, whereas the ones that we determine make more sense as flat fees, the range of time spent is relatively narrow, and so from the least time to the most time is relatively narrow, so it fits within a flat fee.
Okay, I was kind of assuming that, but I just wasn't sure, because like I say, I've seen the conditional use permit reports, and some of them seem very complicated. They're always very well detailed. I've always been impressed with staff's reports, but I just know that some appear to be easier than others, and I didn't know if that just made it fair on the fee schedule, but you know, like I say, if history says otherwise, then I'm satisfied with that. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Funk.
Thank you. Follow up on that question. Is it possible, are we taking an advantage in setting some of these fees as flat fees to make it easier for folks who are trying to do projects to know what to expect?
That's certainly a benefit of flat fees, that the applicant knows what they're going to pay. Versus a deposit, it's very open-ended. And most developers, you know, professional developers, prefer knowing so they can factor that into their numbers.
Yeah, okay. One specific fee I had a question about, and I had lots of questions about individual fees, and I want to thank staff for addressing a lot of them so that we don't have to bring all of them here to council. But I did want to ask about the daycare inspection fees. That's item 91B. It's in with the group home inspection and residential care facility inspections. But I was wondering if that is a relatively new fee for daycare centers, which daycare centers it applies to, and how often they have to have these inspections.
I'll go ahead and jump in. It's not a new fee. There are up to a certain size, up to 8 children. You're only allowed to charge $50 under state law, and so it's adding in that inspection portion that hasn't been added in the past that we're adding in now. But it's always been required.
So previously, we were only able to. The maximum allowed from state law was $50, and now we're going to have a process where we can charge $50 for consultation, but $220 for a permit, which includes at least one and maybe two inspections. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And can we split that out so that daycare centers, which are essential to our business development and quality of life in the community, might be treated differently than all of the other group homes and care facilities of other kinds?
You certainly could. That's up to the council. Absolutely.
Okay. Let me get out of that. And then These fees are all based on recovery of costs. And I know we haven't looked at this since 2014, so that a lot has changed. But as we're looking to recover costs, do we have any comparison, and I'll ask staff for this, on how our city compares with other California cities in terms of the kinds of administrative and overhead costs that we incur?
While we don't have necessarily a comparison related to this study, I can tell you that according to cleargov.com website, in general, our administration and overhead is about 52% less than similar cities. So we are about half of similar cities. According to cleargov.com, where they do pull all the budget data from cities around the nation and certainly here in California. It's not any data that I've analyzed, but that is out there. It gives you a good ballpark.
Great. Thank you. I mean, it's not necessarily a comfort when seeing some of the fees go up as well as some fees go down, but it is helpful to know that our staff is working every day very hard to make every last dollar go as far as it can. And I am very appreciative of that work. That concludes my questions.
Thank you, Councilmember Funk. Any other questions?
I had one
Councilmember Borbo.
Follow-on question. In the resolution, it says that the resolution should take effect 60 days after the effective date. And I don't know if this particular resolution requires a second reading. Doesn't sound like it. So that would... If we adopted it tonight, 60 days would be August 14th, I guess, or thereabouts. For projects that are in the mix, when does it actually take effect in the sense of, you know, if a project's already been perhaps applied for their permits or something, but they haven't undergone every one of these particular fees yet, would the fees go up on them after they've already begun their project, or would it just, are they grandfathered in some way?
Senior Planner Gleason can probably confirm this, but I believe that once somebody draws a permit, that the fees are kind of set on those. Senior Planner Gleason, can you confirm that?
Sure. So we set our fees at time of application. So once somebody applies, they are under that particular fee schedule. So even if their permit is in process or their project is in process, we would not charge them additional fees.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Mayor Pro Tem Newsom.
I noticed in here that return check processing fee is a substantial increase from $29 to $85 per check. Do we seem to have a lot of those?
It really varies. Sometimes we'll have one or two a month. Sometimes we'll have 10. So it can really vary, and that is a substantial fee. I was hoping we would kind of get away from checks as we go and kind of eliminate the need for that fee, but it's still around.
Is the city taking Venmo payments these days?
Not yet, but we're working on the credit cards. So.
And then the other question I have is like a fee like this, when would this go into effect? Obviously, there's no grandfather time limit on this one, correct?
I'm sorry?
This fee would go into effect 60 days after?
Right, and okay. We usually push it to the next Monday after that 60 days expires. So I think maybe the 15th is a Monday. So,
okay, thanks.
Any other questions? All right. With regards to zoo admissions, when is the last time that was changed? Do you know?
I want to say we changed it right around the time of the Red Panda exhibit.
So maybe 2019.
Yeah, maybe a little bit before that. I believe it was right before we did accreditation. So I want to say maybe 2018. I think we're 4 years since accreditation, 2018, okay. 17. I apologize. I'd have to look that up.
That's okay. I should have asked you beforehand. I know it's been a little while. And did we look at potentially increasing that? I know we might sometimes look at that similar to recreation services as something for families to do, and we certainly want to keep that affordable. We also know that our general fund subsidizes the zoo to the total of about $500,000 a year, and costs are only increasing as they are for everyone right now. So we want to make sure that we're not losing ground. So did we look at that at all?
We did, and you're right. We kind of categorize that more in those recreation leisure type activities. So we kind of looked at what it would look like if we did increase them or maybe a CPI inflator on them, but in the end decided that maybe for this year keep them flat. Certainly that's up to council to adjust.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Any other questions before we open up to public comment? Councilmember Funk.
Yeah, one more as a follow-up to some questions my colleagues raised. Is it still, and this is probably for Senior Planner Gleason, is it still an option for certain kinds of questions to come to the DRC without a staff report, without charge to the applicant? When someone is, say, wants to go into escrow on a property, or is in escrow and wants to run it up the flagpole?
Yeah, so all of those times take a staff report, regardless of sort of how big of a question we're asking or how small. A lot of how the DRC is structured or, how sort of staff brings information and what level of information we bring. I think the council, could have some changes or, oversight to change that process a little bit. But as it currently stands today with the amount of information we see sort of requested from the public at hearings and from decision makers, we have gone the way of providing a full staff report.
Okay. But developers do have the chance to bring something to DRC early in a process where they haven't invested as much of their own time, and that consultation could be quite valuable.
They do, and when it doesn't require an application like a use permit and just stops at DRC for that sort of pre-review, there is a charge that is added to the building permit to ensure compliance. But that that initial staff report time and I believe, well, we wouldn't charge for noticing if we don't have the noticing fee anymore. But that is sort of a complementary process that we do for things that don't require an additional level of review.
Okay. Thank you for clarifying.
Thank you. Any other questions before we open up to the public? All right, seeing none, we'll go ahead and open it up to public comment. Anyone here in the chambers, if you're on the webinar, raising your hand on the phone, star 9. Anyone? David? No? All right. Not seeing any public comment, so we'll bring it back to council for deliberation. So I think what I heard out of all of this is, Councilmember Funk, you had brought up maybe the possibility of subsidizing child care facility fees. Would you care to let us know what you're thinking?
Sure. I'm thinking that we keep the inspection at a $50 fee like the consultation is. Rather than having it jump up to it, adding a new $220 fee on that for our daycare centers, where we are working really hard in a variety of ways to develop this asset for our community so that we can attract businesses and jobs and support.
Understood. So what you're saying is $50 total, or $50 plus the $50 for the inspection, for a total of $100?
I can go with $50, but for $100 total, with the $50 fee for inspection instead of a $220 fee for the inspection.
Okay. And that's something we have the ability to do this evening? Yes, Director?
Yes, correct.
Yes. Okay. I would certainly be in favor of that. I know that's something that we are the care. A lot of people in our community are working very diligently to do what we can regarding child care to bring more options, more funding, and so to the extent that we can eliminate some of the barriers, I would certainly be in favor of that. I think I'm seeing, yep, no dissent there. I would like to propose that we consider potentially increasing zoo fees, maybe just on the adults, and keep the kids as is. And my reason being, we've gone through wastewater of a quarter of a century not raising our fees. Now, it's not that bad at the zoo, but we're challenged when we go year after year after year of not raising them, and then we are in this position of needing to, recoup more of our costs, and then an increase can almost seem overwhelming at that point. So wondering if my colleagues might be open to keeping children of, both age groups as is, and going from 10 on adult, say, up to 12, and seniors, 9 up to 10.
I'd be good with that.
My concern on that, or really comment, would be that when we did the rate increase in 2018 or 19, whenever it was, it wasn't as part of a fee study or anything like that, other than you studied the issue relative to the zoo itself, partly because of the substantial general fund subsidy that the mayor mentioned earlier. But I just don't know that we want to make that sausage here tonight versus whether that's something we'd want you to, come back with at any particular time you think is appropriate to say, we've looked at the zoo, we've looked at what we think the impact would be. Because much to my surprise, when we raised the fees fairly substantially last time in 2018, I thought it might result in a substantial drop in attendance, and it did not. I was completely wrong about that. That attendance actually climbed over that time period. So I'm certainly not opposed to the idea. I just don't know if setting a number here is the right place and time. And so I'd look to staff to comment on that.
I think we typically have done it in this kind of a situation. If staff were to analyze what it costs, like with everything else during the zoo, we'd be charging $175 for everybody to come to the zoo.
Yeah, the fee would be $25 for kids. I understand what you're saying. I just didn't think this was the normally where we did that. But I'm not opposed to considering it because I think it.
Can I add to that?
I generally would agree with you, Charles, but I'm not sure what kind of a study would necessarily be.
No, I'm not talking full-blown study.
No, so it's not a significant increase.
I think I spoke a little too soon. Our city manager was ready to say something.
I don't know that staff would have a lot of additional information to bring, especially if you're talking about the modest increase of, $10 to $12 or, $9 to $10. We're not talking significant. Typically what we look at is the Charles Paddock Zoo is, you know, worth an hour to two of entertainment. You can't compare that to the San Diego Zoo, where their tickets are $140 or whatever they are now. But we look at more similar to what other types of family entertainment are in that price range. Certainly a $10 to $12 increase is something that we could do tonight if that's the council pleasure. If you'd like us to look at, I'm not quite sure what we would look at to do that. I don't think that will hurt our attendance at all. Last year in 2021, we actually had our highest attendance ever, and that could be a help. Yeah.
I think there was a lot going on during COVID. Everybody wants to get out and enjoy the great outdoors. I know in 18 and 19, I believe, when we looked at this last time, in this same study session, we chose to break out the children from a different tier to make it more affordable for larger families to bring. I don't think doing an increase on the adults in a dollar on a senior is substantial enough to warrant a study.
All right, so do we have consensus that we could go on general admission 13 and up from 10 to 12 and seniors 65 and up from 9 to 10, keeping all else the same? All right.
I can work with that. And I would add to that that it was 2019 because Mayor Pro Tem Newsom and I were on the council when that came up and okay. Wouldn't have been otherwise. And that we didn't see in response that the city subsidy for the zoo went down from about $600,000 a year to about $500,000 a year. And that was from a financial responsibility perspective, a constructive thing to do.
Yeah, and we need to stay on top of that. Okay, it looks like those are the two things. Was there anything else that any council member wanted to discuss?
I would just like to make sure I clarify and understand. For the inspections, we are just talking about changing the daycare fee to 50 and 50.
Correct.
The group home, right. Schools, those things will continue to be as listed in the staff report.
Correct. So okay. Daycare will go from, 50 for the consultation and 50 for the inspection. Group home inspection will remain as is.
Perfect. Thank you.
Yeah. All right.
And I do just want to point out, too, we are looking at schools. Schools also are requiring this inspection. This would be the inspection fee that we would apply. There is some question whether or not we can charge the schools to do that. So we're working through that, and we'll figure that out.
So schools wouldn't fall under daycare?
No. Okay. They would be under group home also.
Okay.
Just making sure. Inspection fee. Thank you.
All right.
But if you couldn't charge it, obviously, maybe to the school district as a separate governmental entity, you could charge it to private schools?
That is correct. Okay. We believe. Casey is still researching some of that, so yes.
Okay. Thank you.
When he's researching it, can you let me know the difference? Some facilities are doing before and after school or childcare as a school. So what that fine line is if someone's doing both schooling and childcare in the same facility. I'd like to know the difference. Thank you.
We can do that.
And with that, I will look for a motion.
I'll move approval of the revised fee structure as amended.
I'll second.
Motion by Councilmember Funk, second by Mayor Pro Tem Newsom. Is that sufficient?
That works.
All right. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Funk?
Yes.
Councilmember Borbo?
Yes.
Councilmember Darris?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Newsom?
Yes.
Mayor Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Motion passes.
Thank you. I'm trying to remember if I asked if there was any ex parte on this. I think I did ask, but I don't recall. I don't believe any of us had any something needed to say up front. All right. Now we are on to council announcements and committee reports. I will start with who's right in front of me, Councilmember Funk.
Okay. The
Homeless Services Oversight Council is delighted to announce that the draft countywide strategic plan to address homelessness is now fully available for public review. That is currently on the HSOC website. So if you, rather than giving a long website thing, just Google SLO, HSOC, and or countywide homeless plan, SLO, and you should be able to find that point. We are accepting comments from anyone and everyone through the 30th of June to be incorporated into discussions. The formal review of this happens through the Homeless Services Oversight Council and the County Board of Supervisors. It has been briefed. It is being briefed to every city council, as was done with this council a few sessions ago. The Arroyo Grande City Council is getting it tonight, and I can't help with that briefing because I'm here. But we are reaching out to all of them. So please take a look and provide your comments on this important issue. There was a special meeting of the HSOC on the 1st of June to also deal with some two-year goals that align with the five-year plan. The two-year goals are required by the state so that we're eligible for the next $4 million tranche of money, which we need. So those are also available for comment. And strategies that are part of the five-year plan are designated as things that we're going to be doing in those 2 years to make the changes happen and try to get more money, because there's a bonus if we achieve those goals. And that's it for me. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Darris.
I've got CAPSLO meeting coming up, I think, on Thursday. APCD, I believe we're meeting next week. Got a busy calendar. but that's it. That's all I have right now.
Thank you. Councilmember Borbo.
Yeah, two things. The Integrated Waste Management Authority, our board, we selected Mr. Peter Cron as the new permanent executive director. And we put out a notice. Mayor, you should have gotten a copy of that, as it went to all mayors, all city managers and community service district general managers, announcing that selection. Mr. Cron has a great deal of experience in the trash and recycling arena, both in the private sector here in SLO County and previously with the IWMA and more recently with the county. So he's well experienced, I think very well thought of, and so we look forward to him coming on board on June 28th. Separately, also on June 28th, the revised joint powers agreement will come before this council for ratification. It is winding its way around the county, and I think about half the jurisdictions have adopted it, and some have it on June 21st and some have it on June 28th. So we as a body should be looking at that at our next council meeting, as I understand it from our city clerk. And that's it.
Well, and you were alternate for me while I was out of town.
Yes, I was alternate for you, and that was a pretty uneventful meeting at SLOCOG, relatively speaking. And for once, I actually said nothing. So other than I on a couple of voting on a couple of matters. yes. Thought you'd get a kick out of that. So.
All right. Well, thank you. Mayor Pro Tem Newsom.
I don't know what Charles is like when he's speechless. He's always making me laugh. When we used to sit together, we had to be separated. Anyways, on to business, Charles.
I think Charles is the main element, because whenever we sat together, we had to be separated too. So I'm going to say that's, if that happened to two of us, it's Charles.
If you ever wonder why we're chuckling up here, Charles has said something. We have a design review committee meeting on Thursday at 2 o'clock. Councilmember Funk will be joining me. We have one item on the agenda, review of a shade structure at Colony Market. And that's all I have to report.
Excellent. Let's see. On Friday, May 27th, we had a meeting with Paso Robles, Tascadero and Paso Robles. So Mayor Martin and myself, our city managers, our economic development directors, We are moving forward with the RFP-RFQ for the strategic plan for broadband, and the goal is to have that out by the end of this month. We are moving ahead. It is very exciting to see this just full force going forward. Atascadero is going to take the lead on that, so very glad to have our team moving forward. I also... I guess this could be under individual determination, but that's where we're going next. So I will say PASO is asking us for a letter of support for improvements that are going to be done on your roadways near the airport for the spaceport. And if we're really looking North County at a spaceport tech corridor, we certainly want to be supportive of that. There are counties surrounding that are supporting, and we really want to show a regional effort, which of course we're trying to do in many realms, whether it's REACH or other organizations. And so I will be looking at that, and that certainly goes in line with everything that we talk about in terms of economic development and of course our regional partnership with the North County. So with that, I'll ask if there's any other individual determinations. All right, seeing none, we will go ahead and recess to our closed session following the conclusion of this meeting now. And I will ask our city attorney to announce what the item is we will be discussing.
Yes, this will be a conference with real property negotiators. The authority is Government Code Section 54956.8. The real property is located at 5970 El Camino Real. The APN number is in the agenda. The agency negotiator is your city manager. The negotiating parties are Fred Flume Revocable Trust, and the subject of negotiations are purchase price and terms of payment.
Thank you. I will open up for public comment if there's anyone wishing to speak on this item. Go ahead and raise your hand on the webinar. David, do we have anyone on the phone? All right, seeing none, we'll go ahead and close public comment, and council will head to closed session. We will go ahead and adjourn at that time, and we will report out any reportable action item at our June 28th meeting. And with that, good night all.
We got about 5 minutes, right?
5 minutes, Susan.
Okay, thank you.